ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Now there's a questions and answers session. So looks like the questions are there with Madhukanta Prabhu. Is that correct? Okay, so please ask away. Do you have Telugu? Are there any written in Telugu? No. Okay. Okay, already translated into English. All right, please.
I heard from one of your female disciples that a wife should be attached to her husband, whereas it is mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam 3:31-42 that not only is woman the gateway to hell for man, but man is also the gateway to hell for women. Can you please explain how it is applicable for devotees and non-devotees?
Yeah, you can translate the question. The wife is, question is about the husband being the gateway to hell for the wife, as the wife is the gateway to hell for the husband. How are we to understand this? You don't have to repeat that, because I'm just repeating for the recording. I think the questions asked here don't get recorded here. No. So maybe you should give them to me, the questions, and I can read them. Well, it's also said in Bhagavatam that if a husband and wife serve Krishna together, then they can both go to Vaikuntha together. That's stated in the text of the Bhagavatam. Material attachment is what keeps us in this material world. And the center of material attachment, or the focal point, is the attraction between male and female. As I quoted this morning, and I'll quote it again, from Bhagavatam, Pungsastriya mithuni bhavametam tayoraho hridaya grantimahuhu Aho griha kshetra sutapta vitair janasya moho yamahammameti. The binding force in this material world is the attraction between male and female. And male and a female, they tend to become very tightly tied up together. Their hearts become tied up together. Yeah, the word stri, female, comes from the same root as does vistara, means that which increases. So from attachment to female, one's attachment to home, country, children, money, friends, relatives, it all expands. And one thinks in terms of I, me and mine. And this is the path to hell. And if the wife thinks of the husband simply in terms of material enjoyment, then the same applies. So at the basic level of human society is the varnashram system, in which male and female unite on the basis of dharma. And the wife is known as dharma patni, religiously married wife, or sahadharmini, one who executes dharma along with her husband. So one who follows this may be materially attached, but they won't go to hell. But if husband and wife are attached to each other on the basis of executing Bhagavad Dharma, Krishna consciousness, then that is purifying for both of them. And there is no question of them going to hell. Of course, not all devotees are on the fully perfect stage. So there may be, even among Krishna conscious husband and wife, there is a mixture of spiritual desires and material desires. But husband and wife should practice Krishna consciousness together and become free from, become purified and become free from material desires. It's a major topic and one that's often misunderstood. Especially in the modern age, it's much misunderstood, even among our own devotees. For an elaborate discussion of this topic, please see my latest book, which is called Women, Masters or Mothers. Yeah. So the next question. You can see. What is material education and how is it related to our bhakti, and why material education is rejected? If material education is given, will that person not become a devotee? If that is the case, how do I see that many devotees come from good material education? Material education is that education which is imparted without the spirit of understanding that the only real purpose of human life is to surrender to Krishna. Material education is that education which imparts, usually fully, maybe in somewhat Krishna conscious schools, partially, imparts the knowledge and skills by which one can become a slave of the present economic system. Material education, that can also, even Vedic education can be material education. The Upanishads state that there is two kinds of vidya. Para vidya and apara vidya. That means superior and inferior. Transcendental and mundane. So in the field of mundane education comes most of the Vedic knowledge, according to this statement. And it's only when we come to Vedanta that the spiritual education begins, the Upanishads. Because it's conducted with the idea of being happy in this world. Traigunya Vishaya Veda, the Vedas mostly deal with topics of the three modes of material nature. How is material education related to our bhakti? Well, certain knowledge can be utilized in Krishna's service. And all devotees living in this world have to have some kind of material knowledge. Just to live and operate in this world. For instance, at a very simple level, materialistic people know how to brush their teeth and do so, and devotees do so also. And actually that very term, which you just used, danta dhavana, that is mentioned in the Hari Bhakti Vilas, the Smriti Shastra for Gaurya Vaishnavas, as one of the activities that Vaishnavas should do. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself instructed this. So it's not in and of itself a transcendental activity. You can brush your teeth 24 hours a day, but that won't in and of itself help you to advance in Krishna consciousness. But it can be accepted as part of Krishna consciousness to maintain dental health and not have bad odor in the mouth for when one is worshipping the deity. So material knowledge is required to some extent as long as we're in this material world. And if due to circumstance or attachment or whatever, one is part of this modern economic system, then one will require certain knowledge and skills to operate within it. For which some material education is required. Although Srila Prabhupada much recommended that our devotees cut out of this exploitive economic system and live on the land, live simply, and live together and chant Hare Krishna.
వాళ్ళు తరచూ ఈ దోపిడీతో కూడినటువంటి ఆర్థిక వ్యవస్థ నుంచి బంధాన్ని తెంచుకొని భూమిపై నివసించడం అనే దాన్ని ఎక్కువగా ప్రోత్సహించేవారు.
So material education is rejected. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who had at the time what was could be considered the best of material education, he wrote a whole song lamenting his previous involvement in mundane education.
కానీ ఆయన భౌతిక విద్యలో తనకి సమయం ఏ విధంగా ఉదాయిందని దాని గురించి ఒక పాట కూడా.
విద్యా బిలాషై కఠైను కాల్ పరమ సాహసయామి. With great alacrity, I spent so much time in the pastimes of scholarship.
ఆయన గొప్ప ఆవేదనతో చెప్పారు, నేను అనవసరంగా ఎంతో సమయాన్ని
But later his conclusion is that jaro bidya jato mayar bhaybhav tomara bhajane badha anitya sansare moha janamiya jivke kare gadha. His conclusion is that mundane knowledge is a display of maya, the illusory energy. And it is an obstacle in Krishna consciousness, in the cultivation of Krishna consciousness. In this temporary material world, it gives rise to even more illusion. And makes the jiva, who is supposed to serve Krishna, into an ass. Now you may say, well, he had to learn Bengali to read and write, even to write that song. Well, that's true. But it's also true that he didn't have to go through a mundane education system to learn Bengali. If material education is given, will that person not become a devotee? This is the next question. Well, many people, they become devotees despite having been through mundane education. I am one who, at least I'm a semblance of a devotee who went through mundane education. But as long as one is thinking that material education has merit in and of itself, then he can't be a proper devotee. As long as one thinks that in this material world there's something desirable, then one cannot become a proper devotee. So then the next question, if that is the case, how is it that I see many devotees come from good material education? Looks like he's already made up his mind. There is such a thing as good material education. Well, it depends what you mean by good devotees. Someone may be performing devotional service, but if they maintain attachment to the concept that mundane education or anything mundane is in and of itself valuable, then they're not so good after all. They're giving value to a value system which devalues Krishna. So that's it in brief. I've spoken on this many times. But our devotees, they mostly don't believe it. They want to have the best of both worlds. They haven't understood that there's nothing good in this material world. As long as we're trying to be happy in this material world, we can't actually be Krishna conscious, even if externally we seem to be a good devotee. Okay, next question. Will initiated devotees living in cities and practicing Krishna consciousness go back to Godhead or not? If they will also attain going back to Godhead, is it necessary living on Varnashram farms?
భక్తి చేస్తూ ఉండేటువంటి భక్తులు ఎవరైతే ఉన్నారో వాళ్ళు భగవద్ధామానికి తిరిగి వెళ్తారా లేదా? ఒకవేళ వాళ్ళు తిరిగి వెళ్తారు అని అంటే మరి వర్ణాశ్రమ క్షేత్రాల్లో నివసించాల్సిన అవసరం ఉంది.
Those living in cities, if they become who are devotees and practicing, if they become fully Krishna conscious, they'll go back to Godhead. And if not, they probably won't go back to Godhead, although there's always the special mercy possibility. There's always the possibility of some extra special mercy. The same is true of devotees living in Vaishnava communities on farms. Regarding the farm communities, Srila Prabhupada said that we want to create a favorable situation for practicing Krishna consciousness. Modern city life is not a very favorable situation for practicing Krishna consciousness for most people. The atmosphere is full of lust and greed. And cheating and exploitation. It's full of bad association. Devotees, mostly they have to work long hours, so they don't get time to practice even the minimal amount of sadhana that Srila Prabhupada wanted his disciples to follow. For householders to live in the farm community, they have they're in association, saintly association of devotees all the time. And they have full morning and evening programs of sadhana every day. So it is a more favorable situation for executing Krishna consciousness. So it helps our chances of becoming purified. It also, for children to be raised in Krishna consciousness, is far more favorable than raising them in some school in the city. Where all the children are eating eggs and meat, and in the school book it states that eggs are very good for health, you should eat at least one or two every day. Actually, in India, up until fairly recently, there was quite a good standard of culture. But I don't think that whatever culture is there, I don't think we can expect that to last very long. Among the young generation, especially in the cities, illicit sex has become just absolutely normal. Unmarried boys and girls having sex. The men are drinking so much and smoking, and the girls are trying to catch up. So it's a very, very bad situation. So the next question. What should be our attitude when we meet other Maharaja's disciples? But after listening to the lectures of yours, like some concerns about ISKCON, it seems difficult to give respect to the gurus who are now getting deviated from the path. As you have mentioned in the initiation standards that all your disciples should give respect to all the Prabhupada disciples. We should respect all the Vaishnavas. But we need not know, if we find that there is some philosophical or behavioral deviation, then we should keep a distance also. That's it. During the course of our preaching to students, we are frequently asked by them, if everything is created by God, then who created God? We try to convince the students by telling them that God can't be created. He is not the product of creation. How to give a convincing answer?
విద్యార్థులకి ప్రచారం చేసేటప్పుడు తరచూ విద్యార్థులు మమ్మల్ని ఒక ప్రశ్న వేస్తుంటారు. అదేమిటంటే, మనం చూసే ప్రతీది కూడా భగవంతుడి చేత సృష్టింపబడినట్లయితే మరి భగవంతుడిని ఎవరు సృష్టించారు? మేము వాళ్ళని ఏ విధంగా సమాధానం పరుస్తామంటే, భగవంతుడు అనేది ఒక తయారు చేయబడేటువంటి వస్తువు కాదు. ఆయన ఈ సృష్టి యొక్క ఫలితం కాదు. మరి దీనికి ఏమని సమాధానం చెప్పొచ్చు? దయచేసి సవివరంగా దీన్ని తెలియజేయండి.
Well, it's very often difficult to, it is difficult to convince people who are in the mood of not wanting to be convinced.
ఎవరైతే నేను ఎప్పటికీ కూడా దానికి ఒప్పుకోకూడదు అనేటువంటి భావంతో ఉంటారో వాళ్ళని ఈ విషయాల గురించి ఒప్పించడం చాలా కష్టం.
They think they already understood everything.
వాళ్ళు ఏమనుకుంటారంటే అప్పటికే వాళ్ళకి అంత అర్థమైపోయింది అని అనుకుంటారు.
So if we say who created God, and then we get into an infinite regress. That means then you say, well, who created the creator of God, and then who created the creator of the creator of God, and it goes on to an infinite regress.
ఒకవేళ భగవంతుడికి సృష్టి భగవంతుని ఎవరు సృష్టించారు అనుకుంటే ఆ సృష్టించిన వాడిని మళ్ళీ ఎవరు సృష్టించారు వాడిని మళ్ళీ ఎవరు సృష్టించారు ఈ విధంగా అది అలా వెళ్ళిపోతుంటుంది. సమాధానం అనేది ఉండదు.
There are many arguments against atheism.
నాస్తికత్వానికి వ్యతిరేకంగా ఎన్నో వాదనలు ఉన్నాయి.
But certain people they won't be convinced.
కానీ కొంతమంది ఎంత చెప్పినా సరే వాళ్ళు ఒప్పుకోరు.
They are described by Prahlad Maharaj as recorded in Srimad Bhagavatam. Persons who have decided never to be Krishna conscious, they never will be Krishna conscious.
ఎవరైతే ఎప్పటికీ కృష్ణుడికి కృష్ణ చైతన్యం మనం పెంపొందించుకోకూడదని అనుకుంటారో వాళ్ళు ఎప్పటికీ కూడా కృష్ణ చైతన్యం అందరూ కాలేదు.
They may say, I'm searching for the truth.
వాళ్ళు అంటూ ఉంటారు, మేము సత్యం కోసం వెతుకుతున్నాము.
Or they may say, we're going to discuss to better understand. Let us discuss to understand these things better.
కొన్నిసార్లు ఏమంటారంటే ఈ విషయాన్ని బాగా అర్థం చేసుకోవడానికి మనం చర్చ చదువుతూ
ఉంటారు. But actually their aim of life is simply to enjoy the senses.
కానీ వాస్తవానికి వాళ్ళ జీవిత గమ్యం ఏంటంటే ఇంద్రియాలతో బోధించడం.
And their senses are uncontrolled.
ఎందుకంటే ఇంద్రియాలు నియంత్రించలేనివి.
Therefore they enter into hell.
అందుకే వాళ్ళు నరకంలోకి ప్రవేశిస్తారు.
And life after life they chew that which has already been chewed.
అందుకే జన్మ తర్వాత జన్మ మళ్ళీ నగిలిందే మళ్ళీ నగులుతూ ఉంటారు.
There are various arguments which you can bring. One thing is that we are not the body. This is not directly on the subject of God. But we should understand that there is the spiritual factor, that everything is not simply chemicals. I am not chemicals, you are not chemicals. If we smash someone's car with a machete, that is a crime, but it's not as serious a crime as chopping someone's body to pieces with a machete.
ఒకవేళ మనం ఒక పెద్ద గుడ్డ లాంటి తీసుకొని ఒక కారుని చిత్త కొట్టామనుకోండి, అది ఒక వ్యక్తి తలకాయని గుడ్డంతో వేరు చేయడం అంత తీవ్రమైన నేరం కాదు.
A car is a combination of chemicals, and so is a human body. So why is it considered a much worse crime to cut to pieces a living human body than to cut to pieces a motor car? The answer is because the human body is enlivened. It is literally enlivened by the animated by the presence of the soul. So that's the first thing to understand. We are not just chemicals. If someone insists I'm just chemicals, then slap him in the face. and say it's just some chemicals moving and interacting with some other chemicals, so don't get upset. There's no you to get upset anyway, because you're just chemicals. Another point is that we are all controlled. We are not independent. When we have dysentery, then our intestinal system is completely out of control. And most of these students, their mind is completely out of control. We can't fly in the sky like a bird. We're limited, we're controlled. So you have to admit there is some agency that is controlling you. There are so many arguments. They'll go on arguing. So give them prasad and chant Hare Krishna with them also. This book is, Srila Prabhupada liked that very much, The Scientific Basis of Krishna Consciousness. Written by, what was his name? Damodar Swarup Brahmachari. Swarup Damodar. Later he became Bhakti Damodar Swarup, something like that. So in that book it said that the scientists, they may be atheistic, but when there was some Apollo space mission and it got out of control in the middle of space, and then everyone started praying for them, praying to God to save them. At that time they thought, we're in control. But when they realized it was out of their control, they started praying to God. One good line you can say, may be true or not true, you could say, well, I was also an atheist. But there's no satisfaction for the soul in being an atheist. There are different things you can say. Bhagavad Gita 11:54. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada states a word, actually a phrase, undivided devotional service. How to understand the word undivided in this context?
విభజించలేనటువంటి భక్తియుత సేవ అద్వితీయమైనటువంటి భక్తియుత సేవ
undivided, avibhajita.
అవిభాజితమైనటువంటి భక్తియుత సేవ. మరి ఈ పదం అవిభాజిత అనేటువంటి ఎలా అర్థం చేసుకోవాలి?
యా భక్త్యాత్వనన్యయ. Literally the word is given ananya, without any other.
ఇక్కడ అనన్య అనేటువంటి పదం వాడబడింది, అంటే వేరే ఇంకేది లేదు అని అర్థం.
There are many synonyms for this. Avyabhicharini bhakti is stated in the end of the 13th chapter. Ananya, again the word, ananya, ananya cheta satatam yomam smarati nityashaha. So the idea is that undivided means our attention is not 90% on bhakti and 10% on something else. It's ananya, without any other diversion.
ఏకాగ్రత ఉంటుంది, 10% భౌతికంగా ఏకాగ్రత ఉంటుంది అని కాదు. అంటే పూర్తి ఏకాగ్రత, పూర్తి ధ్యాస ఇప్పుడు కూడా భగవంతుడి సేవ మీదే ఉండాలి.
So Srila Prabhupada, in English, she renders this as undivided, unalloyed, pure.
Srila Prabhupada in Anglo lo ee suddhamainatundi avibhajitamainatundi ani rakarakala padalu nivarincharu.
Yeah, so next one. We learn that the fixed dharma of every living entity is to serve and please Krishna. Also, it is said that every jiva has minute independence to serve Krishna, whether to serve Krishna or not. Also, if he does not serve, then he is implicated by the laws of nature and has to suffer. It seems to be a bit contradictory on the one hand, that on the one hand we have a fixed dharma, and on the other hand we have some independence which, if misutilized, leads to suffering. It looks like actually there is no independence, because serving Krishna seems to be the only option for gaining happiness. All this appears to be a game being played by Krishna. Please clarify.
మనకి మనం అర్థం చేసుకున్నటువంటి విషయం ఏంటంటే, ప్రతి జీవి యొక్క కర్మ కృష్ణుని సేవించడం. అంతేకాకుండా మనకి తెలిసిన ఇంకొక విషయం ఏంటంటే, ప్రతి జీవికి సూక్ష్మమైనటువంటి స్వతంత్రం అనేది ఉంది. ఆ స్వతంత్రాన్ని ఉపయోగించుకుని మనం కృష్ణుడికి సేవ చేయాలా లేదా అనేది మనం ఎన్నుకోవచ్చు. కానీ ఒకవేళ మనం కృష్ణుడికి సేవ చేయనట్లయితే, ఈ భౌతిక ఈ ప్రకృతి నియమాలు ఏవైతే ఉన్నాయో వాటి చేత మనం శిక్షించబడతాం. కాకపోతే ఇది కొంచెం అర్థం కాని విధంగా ఉంది, ఒకదానికొకటి వ్యతిరేకంగా కనిపిస్తుంది. ఏమిటి, ఒక పక్క మనకి ఒక నిర్ణీతమైనటువంటి ధర్మం ఉంది అని చెప్తున్నారు, మరొక వైపు మనకి కొంత స్వతంత్రం అనేది కూడా ఉంది అంటున్నారు. ఆ స్వతంత్రాన్ని సరిగా వాడుకున్నట్లయితే మనం దుఃఖిస్తామని అంటున్నారు. దీన్ని బట్టి చూస్తున్నట్లయితే మనకి నిజంగా స్వతంత్రం లేదని అర్థం చేసుకోవాలి. ఎందుకంటే కృష్ణుడికి సేవ చేయడం తప్ప మనకి వేరే గతి లేదు. కృష్ణుడికి సేవ చేస్తేనే మనకి ఆనందం వస్తుంది. ఇదంతా కూడా చూస్తే ఒక ఆటలాగా నాకు అనిపిస్తుంది. ఇదంతా కూడా కృష్ణుడు ఆడుతున్నటువంటి ఆట అని నేను అనుకుంటున్నాను. దయచేసి వివరించండి.
Well, that's one perspective of assessing the situation. Krishna is the supreme transcendental autocrat. He makes the laws. We can't sit at a table and have some kind of conciliation. Okay, Krishna, let's just adjust it a bit the way we want.
మనం ఒక పల్లకి ఒక పక్కన కూర్చొని కృష్ణుడితో మనం ఒప్పందం చేసుకోలేము. కృష్ణ, ఇదిగో ఇంత శాతం నువ్వు నీ చేతిలో ఉంచుకో, కొంత శాతం నాకు స్వతంత్ర ఇవ్వు అని చెప్పడం.
All the jivas form a union and go to the management and make their demands.
జీవులందరూ కలిసి ఒక జట్టుగా ఏర్పడి యాజమాన్యం దగ్గరికి వెళ్ళి ఏమి వాదించడానికి కుదరదు.
Doesn't work.
ఇది పనిచేయదు.
Like it or not, we are controlled. We have no choice in this matter. We have the choice either to accept to serve Krishna or not to serve Krishna. If we serve Krishna, then automatically we'll be happy. If we don't like to serve Krishna, then Krishna will give us all opportunity to try to be happy without him, but it won't work. So if you have any problem with this, you can protest to Krishna. But there's no use to do so. If we simply accept to serve Krishna, then we'll be as happy as Krishna. But we all have different roles to play. If the servant wants to be the king, It's not possible for him. If he serves the king, then he'll be properly looked after, properly cared for by the king. So everyone should understand their position. Game of Krishna. Yeah, Krishna's pastimes, they're like games. Krishna is called Keli Parayana. He's attached to playing. So if we want, we can join Krishna in his playing. He doesn't ban you from that. He invites us to come and join us. But he sets the terms and conditions. Otherwise, if everyone comes with their own terms and conditions, it will be chaos. So, Krishna is more intelligent than us, and it's better we just accept that and go along with his plan. Otherwise, we become a demon. How to do bhakti when there is no association? This is a question from Kiran Prabhu and Divya Mataji. Well, at least they have each other's association. It's better than nothing. That's better than nothing. Husband and wife can do bhakti together. The next question, is it allowed for a pregnant woman to perform deity worship? Generally, according to Smarta Vidhi, women don't perform deity worship at all. According to Vaishnava Vidhi, that means, especially in the Gaudiya Sampradaya, women are allowed to worship the deity. But there isn't elaborate details given. One has to worship the deity in a clean state. As far as I know, pregnancy in and of itself doesn't mean contamination. Is it? When there's menstruation, that is contamination, but I don't think pregnancy in and of itself is not contamination, is it? Some Vaishnava sects don't allow. They allow it, but not in pregnancy. Okay. Probably for the first 1 or 2 months or more, it would be okay, but after that, it becomes difficult for them to do so many activities. So from that consideration, they could be... I don't really know much about pregnancy, to tell you the truth, so I don't know what they undergo. But it may be some strain on them. Probably needs more research. Okay, I'll keep that one and look into that more. Which Vaishnava sects disallow? that allow women to do deity worship, disallow it in pregnancy? Some Sri Vaishnavas, is it? Some, not all Sri Vaishnavas, or what? You're not sure. They don't allow even Tengalai? They allow women can cook. It'd be difficult if they didn't. I'm talking about at home. In the temple, no one allows except in ISKCON. I see. But in Shastra it says that women, initiated women can also worship Shalagram Shila. And Shudras in Shastra, as quoted in Hari Bhakti Vilas. But they're allowed to cook, which if they didn't allow them, it would be very difficult to conduct the household. But that's considered part of Archan, isn't it, cooking? Not direct. They're not allowed to perform the yajna. They're not allowed to chant mantras with omkar. All right, it requires more research. In the Western countries, if we didn't allow the ladies to do deity worship, it would probably all just collapse. When I joined in London, the whole deity worship was being done by a team of brahmacharinis. They all later got married. And all the brahmacharis, we hardly spoke to them anything, but we respected them. They're doing such good service. Where's the beginning and where's the end of this? Narupa masyeha tatopa labhyate achantana deya nacha sampratishta. This from Bhagavatam, Krishna's instructions to Uddhava. Gam dugdha deham asatim cha bharyam deham paradhinam asat prajans cha vitam tritirti kritam anga vacham hinam maya rakshati dukha dukhi. My dear Uddhava, that man is certainly most miserable who takes care of a cow that gives no milk, an unchaste wife, a body totally dependent on others, useless children, wealth not utilized for right purposes. Similarly, one who studies Vedic knowledge devoid of my glories is also most miserable. My question is how to understand that Krishna, who is Govinda, calling that person who takes care of a cow that gives no milk as dukkha dukhi, one who suffers one misery after another. Purport given by the commentaries seems to be the opposite without explanation on the point that Lord Krishna made. Can you please explain?
శ్రీమద్ భాగవతం 11వ స్కందం 11వ అధ్యాయం 19వ శ్లోకంలో కృష్ణుడు ఉద్ధవుడికి బోధించినటువంటి ఒక శ్లోకం అక్కడ ఉదాహరించారు. ఆ శ్లోకంలో ఏమని చెప్పబడింది అంటే, ఓ నా ప్రియమైన ఉద్ధవ, ఏ వ్యక్తి అయితే ఎటువంటి పాలు ఇవ్వనటువంటి ఆవుకి సేవ చేస్తుంటాడో, పతివ్రత కానటువంటి భార్యని ఆదరిస్తూ ఉంటాడో, ఇతరుల మీద ఆధారపడినటువంటి శరీరాన్ని సేవిస్తూ ఉంటాడో, ఎందుకు పనికిరైనటువంటి పిల్లల్ని కాపాడుతూ ఉంటాడో, లేదా ఎందుకు పనికిరాని ఎందుకు ఉపయోగించినటువంటి ధనాన్ని అతను దాచుకుని ఉంటాడో, అటువంటి వాడు అంతేకాకుండా ఎవరైతే వైదిక శాస్త్రాలను అధ్యయనం చేస్తాడు, కానీ అతను అధ్యయనం చేసే దాంట్లో భగవంతుడి గురించినటువంటి కీర్తన ఏది కూడా ఉండదో, అటువంటి పనులు చేసేవాడి యొక్క జీవితం చాలా దుఃఖభరితంగా తయారవుతుంది అని చెప్పకూడదు. మరి ఇక్కడ నా ప్రశ్న ఏమిటంటే, కృష్ణుడిని గోవిందుడు అని చెప్పి మనం అంటాం, మరి అటువంటి కృష్ణుడు ఆవు పాలు ఇవ్వనట్లయితే, ఆవుని ఎవరైతే సేవ చేస్తుంటారో అటువంటి ఆవుకి వాళ్ళు దుఃఖ దుఃఖి అంటే ఎంతో దుఃఖానికి గురవుతారని ఎందుకు చెప్పబడింది?
This seems to be a practical consideration. Just like, for instance, it's often stated in Shastra that such and such, just like King Nriga, he would give cows with one calf that would give so much milk, so that was considered to be a very good donation to have a cow that gives much milk.
నృగ మహారాజు ఆవులు అంటే గోదానం చేసినప్పుడు ఒక మంచి లేగ దూడ ఉంది అంటే పాలు ఇచ్చే సమయంలో ఒక దూడ ఉన్నటువంటి ఆవుని దానం ఇచ్చేవాడు. ఆ విధంగా దానం ఇవ్వడం అనేది ఉన్నతమైనదిగా పరిగణించబడేది.
Whereas if one has a cow that doesn't give milk, then there's the cost of maintenance with no milk or cost or they you have to collect food and everything for that.
ఒకవేళ మనం పాలు ఇవ్వనటువంటి ఆవును కనుక దానం ఇచ్చాం అనుకోండి, అటువంటి పాలు ఇవ్వని ఆవుని పోషించాలంటే మనకి దాని గ్రాసానికి దాని యొక్క మేతకి ఎంతో ఖర్చు అవుతుంది, దానివల్ల ఎటువంటి ఉపయోగం ఉండదు.
It doesn't say that one should kill such a cow. But as a practical consideration, one would like to have a cow that gives much milk rather than one that gives little milk or no milk. Srila Prabhupada, he told devotees, actually in Hyderabad, that they should not accept donations of useless cows. Sometimes people have cows and they don't want to sell them for slaughter, but they also don't want to maintain them because they don't give any milk, so they give them away in charity. There's a saying in Bengali that Srila Prabhupada sometimes used to quote. Kana Guru Brahman Ke Dan, to give a one-eyed cow or a cow that's blind in one eye as a donation to a Brahmana. So the cow may give milk even with one eye, but it's not so very auspicious. So it's a practical example to make the point. The point is of this verse that studying Vedic knowledge without glorifying Krishna is shrama eva hi kevalam. It's work without any positive result. Okay, please chant Hare Krishna for a few minutes. Yes, you can do. And I should be back in a few minutes.